Hey, this is J.R. McNair here, Velocity Radio. We're in Atlanta, Georgia. We have had a phenomenal day. Some amazing guests come on from start to finish. I told you all this was going to be some amazing content, and we have nothing less than amazing show that's getting ready to happen. I'm just telling you ahead of time because I just was on a panel, moderating a panel downstairs, and I wish we could have talked for an hour apiece because all of these people have some amazing content. We're sharing some things that are really, really helping people. So we're here live at the Millionaire Mastermind Academy Entrepreneur Summit here at the Hyatt Regency in Atlanta. And I'm so excited to have some amazing people here. JL, tell the people hello.
Hello, everybody. Hello out there, Radio World.
Yes, most definitely. And then we have Christian. Tell everybody hello.
Hey, world. This is Christian.
All right. And last but not least, Larry.
JR, it's good to be with you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Listen, we're going to go straight get in with you, JL. Listen, you were dropping some nuggets down there. You were talking to people about what it is you do and how you can actually help people. You came all the way from Houston?
I live in Atlanta. I go back and forth from Houston. I'm born and raised in Houston.
Houston, okay.
Born and raised, but I've been here since June 1991.
Oh, wow.
In Atlanta.
So that's amazing. So listen, we're very interested in learning about you, how you got into this space. So I want tell the people who you are, how you got into this space, and what your company currently is doing to help change the world.
Okay. First of all, what I do is I'm the founder of Pinpoint. Pinpoint has a lot of offsprings. We are Pinpoint Commercial Underwriters, which is that side is the finance side of Pinpoint, where we help finance people get business loans, finance people who's purchasing commercial real estate or purchasing a home, residential. I've been in business since 1992. Then on the opposite side of Pinpoint Commercial Underwriters, we have Pinpoint Brokers. That's our commercial real estate firm, which we are a licensed real estate brokerage firm where we have licensed agents and brokers that sell real estate property, but we primarily focus on commercial real estate, although we do have some agents that do residential. Our mainly focus is commercial real estate, commercial leasing. We are experts at that. Then we have Pinpoint Foundation. Pinpoint Foundation was formed because I get a lot of clients, a lot of small business owners, entrepreneurs who come to Pinpoint Commercial Underwriters and try to borrow funds to be able to get a business loan. And I had a thing about the number one thing I found out about a lot of small business owners is that they never had the resources, they never had their credentials right to get that business loan. So they go around and you always hear, won't nobody give me a loan, the bank won't give me a loan, a VC capital won't give me a loan, nobody give me a loan. But when they come to me, I tell them why they don't get a loan. You can't get a loan because for the number one thing, you don't have a business plan. You don't have a roadmap to tell me about your business, which is very essential. You need a roadmap, a business plan about your business, whether you are trying to borrow funds or whether you just want to open up your business. If you want to go to somebody and try to have them convince them to give you some money for it versus the conversation, show me something. And inside that business plan, it's a lot of key elements when I come back. So I seen that was one of the main things why business owners couldn't get loans. So I created the foundation, and we incorporated that business, which is called the ISTB program, inside the business. And you can see it on our website, pinpointfoundation.org. That's P-E-N-P-O-I-N-T-E, foundation.org. And we also created a program called the Bab Foyer Program because we have a lot of small entrepreneurs. And the Bab Foyer Program is building a business for our young adults. So they find us on the website, and they come to us for funds. Again, they don't have everything set up right. I mean, from the breakdown of a business, an entrepreneur, small business owner, you don't have, a lot of them don't have their company incorporated, whether you're INC, whether you're LLC, whether you're LP, limited partnership. A lot of them don't have that. And they don't understand that. They don't have a tax ID. They continue to do business in their own name using their social security, not separating the entity from their business. There, a lot of them don't have, they don't have their EIN number, which is your tax ID, employment identification number. a lot of them, again, don't have a business plan. Again, they don't have nothing to show on how you want to get funds. You don't have a profit and loss. Just because you start your own business, you still should have the key things, essentials. In a new business, you should have a financial statement, not a personal financial statement, but a business financial statement. You should have a balance sheet for your business. A lot of people don't understand that. These are things that banks, venture capitalists, hedge funds, wherever you may go, it's just your friend on the street, respectable enough if you got to ask them for money, have these type of things. What is a balance sheet? Balance sheet is something that you have. Let's say you take your business and you starting it up. Whether you invest in $10, whether you invest it in $1,000, that should go on your balance sheet. If you purchase some equipment, whether it's a computer, whether it's a printer, that goes on your balance sheet. Whether you have funds or anything that's up under your mattress or in the bank that you open up a business bank account, that goes on your balance sheet. Kind of tell us where you at about your business. So that and for the financial statement goes back. How did what you got invested? The number one thing I see in entrepreneurs and why we started with the foundation to go back is they don't like to invest in themselves, but they want to give you the conversation and their dream and their vision, but they don't invest one dime in themselves. And then they try to do everything themselves, from getting a business plan, from setting up their business and corporation. They don't want to go to somewhere like a LegalZoom. They don't want to go to somewhere like a couple of these companies out here who will set your business up right to make sure you have a operating agreement to break down the structure
that's
of your
so
business.
Big.
Yeah, brother, when you're LLC, you should have an operating agreement. When you're in corporation, you should have bylaws. They don't understand the two differences. When you're LP, you should have also your bylaws. You break down who can do what. It's so essential that you come to me and tell me, well, who can open up a business account? Well, who can borrow funds on the name, and who's gonna be able to sign for it? Come with your corporate resolution. So all these things, pinpoint commercial underwriter seen was a problem with small entrepreneurs, business owners. And then the key thing that I share about business owners, that's what pinpoint commercial underwriter does outside of the commercial underwriting, which is what you have in the back. But the key thing about starting a business, you must always know your place, and you must know if you're a true entrepreneur, because a lot of us not. Some of us just got a vision and a thought, whether it's over a drink, whether it's arguing mad with your boss, doesn't mean you're an entrepreneur, because you got to understand that entrepreneurs, guess what they do? They create their own paycheck. Now, can you sustain, and are you conditioned enough, disciplined enough, to get up in the morning, beat that creative thought, that creative mindset, and people friendly enough to go out there and get and attract business for your business? So a lot of those key elements that we deal with, whether you're purchasing a commercial real estate, because that should go in your business name, not in your personal name. Whether you're doing a commercial lease, that should go in your business name and not in your personal name, because everything is about business. And that's what Pinpoint is basically about, whether it's with the commercial underwriting, whether it's with the real estate firm, Pinpoint Brokers, or whether with the foundation, which teaches the financial responsibilities of a business and more. So, you could follow us. I mean, you could go on our visit us with our real estate firm. It's pinpointbrokers.net. And again, that's PENPOINTE, brokers with an S.net, or Pinpoint Foundation. Kind of learn a little bit more about us. And you can find us, of course, on LinkedIn and your social media site. Just Pinpoint. You could be able to, and that's Pinpoint with point with an E. Pin like P-E-N and point your finger. Only put an E on the end of it. So that's just a gist of what Pinpoint is about.
I love that, man. I love that. My last question for you is this. You know, I always ask people this also. I'm very big on BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals, and I try to make sure we set them out 5 years, you know, so that you can really go out there and set something that's really so big that you can't really be the person today to go and achieve that. You have to have a different team, a different level of knowledge, resources, network, whatever the case is. Where do you see, okay, Pinpoint in 5 years?
What do I see Pinpoint in 5 years?
Yeah.
What Pinpoint is now? Pinpoint is not a startup business. I'm glad you asked that. Small business owners, once you from $1 to $5 million in sales, you're considered to be a small business owner. $5 million and above, you're no longer considered to be a small business owner. Pinpoint brokers and Pinpoint commercial underwriters that has sales equal up to $240 million a year, $30 and $40 million a year. So where we see ourselves continuing to grow in 5 years, only if God bless us see it, because they ain't no day promise, Pinpoint continue to see themselves growing as we've been growing, like we do business in the state of Georgia, the state of Texas, state of California, state of Florida, pretty much all around on the commercial side when we lend money to, when we broker money, when we lend money to small business owners or to someone who's trying to purchase a property. Like, we see ourselves in the next couple of years, we have a client out of California, and we're doing a development out in South Fulton, Georgia, and this project is $30 to $40 million. $30 to $40 million starting off, and we're helping them get funded for that. And she's a minority female owner as well. So when you ask us how we see us in 5 years, there's no disrespect.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a small business owner question. But I can say this here. Where any business, be you big or small, see yourself in 5 years, it always go back to how you're marketing yourself. When we started, I started off with Dunn's Underwriters, and I renamed the company in 2004-05. We paid back in the 1990s, say 95, 96, we paid for a website, and it was around $20,000. Website, small business owners don't have an understanding of this is where they'll see themselves if they invest in themselves. Websites don't cost that much no more, but I've always been believing in investing in myself. Website, World Wide Web. World Wide Web. That means the World Wide Web, seeing you all around. And if you want to see yourself somewhere other than the place where you're at now in 5 years, invest in that World Wide Web, your website, and have someone pay someone to know how to do your website. A lot of small business owners, they want to try to do it themselves, pay somebody $500 or whatever. You don't want to invest yourself. If you're going out partying and you're messing off $300, $400, $1,000, guess what? You can invest in yourself and your website. So where we see ourselves is continuing to grow and help sponsor and help fund larger developments like we've been doing.
That's awesome. Listen, I told you I was going to be some great content. Thank you so much, JL.
Thank you for having us.
No, for all that great information. All that great information. That's amazing. And Christian,
yeah,
we're going to get to you now and talk about all the things you all do. You all have started Montessori schools, which I am a great fan of, and you all are doing amazing things. Y'all are making sure that this event is running smoothly today.
Right.
And so, I mean, just all the great things that you all are doing. Gideon, talk about, you know, what you're doing, what your wife's doing, what y'all are doing as a team. Y'all are an amazing couple. Power, truly a power couple if there ever was one, right?
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Well, first of all, thanks for allowing me to be on here and talking to your audience. My wife and I, we came to this country, to the United States, 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been, well, maybe 17 now. I'm losing track. So we both, my wife and I, were born and raised in Germany.
Okay.
So we were raised in a different cultural environment, a different language, and a different entrepreneurial or less entrepreneurial mindset. So where we come from, people rent their houses and they clock in to do a job and go for the safety net rather than for the pie in the sky and high risk endeavors. That's not how we were raised. Even though I come from a family of entrepreneurs, we had a small family business in a small town. So I quickly learned that I'm not a good employee. However, I went the employee route just to get that under my belt and realize, what is it that I'm passionate about? So fast forward now, we're 2019, we live in Atlanta. We've been living in Atlanta for the past 2.5 years. Lived in Tennessee for 13 years. Lived in Minnesota for a year. So I've been around this country a little bit. And what my wife and I are passionate about is connecting with what we call the other. And I'm putting the other in air quotes. Clients come to us when they want to understand how to communicate with people who are not like them. And JL just talked about www, World Wide Web, going global, being available, visible, referable on a global scale. So what works at home, what works in your home native market, may not or will most likely not work abroad. I've lived through that. My wife has lived through that.
Walmart is a perfect example.
Walmart
of that.
Failed in Germany.
They did.
And look at what Aldi and Lidl and all the other German discount grocers are doing here in the United States. They're giving Walmart a run for the money. I'm not saying the Germans are doing it better. It's just a proof of the pudding that what works at home doesn't necessarily work abroad. And it is often, if not always, culture.
That's
part of it is the business model, but the way the business model is set up is because our minds are set differently. And we can talk about how the globe is getting smaller, how we can travel with ease, how we have technology to bridge all those time zone differences. At the end of the day, people around the world go about solving problems differently.
That's
and
so true.
It is rooted in their culture. Look at this country. Look at the United States, 320-something million people. Are we all one uniform culture? Heck no. Mm-mm. I'm one of the few white people in this room today.
That's right.
And there's a whole bunch of African Americans.
That's
do
right.
African Americans go about their business differently than Caucasians? Heck yeah.
That's
do they
right.
do different than Latinos or Asian Americans? Of course they do.
That's correct.
Is there a right way or wrong way? I doubt it.
Yeah.
Every way of doing business is quote-unquote normal.
Yeah.
However, every normal has its validity in their respective fields. What the challenge is that companies think they have figured it out in their market. Oh, I'm good at this here, so let me take this somewhere else. And they do it the exact same way, carbon copy.
That's right.
Boom, they fall on their face.
Yeah.
They get a bloody nose. That's when they come to me.
Yeah.
So I didn't give myself that name. My industry gave me that name. I'm called the culture guy because I come in and help people understand different sets of quote-unquote normals. I help them understand to navigate the cultural gap, to close it, or at least to minimize the gap so it becomes navigable. Is that a word?
English
is not my first
language.
English is not my first language. I just made that word up.
It sounds like what? Yeah.
So the core of what we do is communication training. So people come to us and they ask me, hey, Christian, what do you do? And I tell them all this and they say, oh, yeah, that sounds like soft skills training. And nothing gets me fired up more than that comment.
Okay.
Because soft skill, what does that mean, soft?
Yeah.
As opposed to what? Hard.
Hard.
What is the hard skill then?
That's
well,
right.
My subject matter expertise, what I went to college for, what I have 25 years of track record worth of showing how good I am at this. Awesome. Without the quote-unquote so-called soft skills, the ability to efficiently communicate with people, how you relate to others, how you motivate, inspire people to do what is in your mutual benefit, if that is called soft, then I don't know what, because without those quote-unquote soft skills, none of your hard skills will ever work to their full potential.
No, I was in a room with a bunch of CEOs. We were I sit on several college boards, advisory boards, and we were in a room. We're at Middle Georgia State University.
Yeah.
And we all filled out this form on what they felt, because they were creating their graduate school for one of their business school curriculums. And they filled out all this stuff. The number one thing that people were looking for, though, were what you consider soft skills.
Yeah.
But these were the things that the CEOs were like, this is what we want. We don't care about all these other things as much. It's not like they didn't now, but it was further down on the priority list. So you're totally right.
Go on Forbes. I think it was on there's multiple outlets that I saw that recently. On Forbes was an article, the top 20 skills you need to be successful in the 2020s, right, in the upcoming decade. Sure enough, cultural competence is among the top 10.
Right.
So what we teach is what I call ICEQ, I-C-E-Q. So it's IQ plus CQ plus EQ. IQ, I think I don't have to explain, your intelligence quotient, your intelligence capacity. CQ, cultural intelligence. EQ, emotional intelligence. Mm. Those three are the triad that you have to have in place. If you want to be successful in global business without ICEQ, you're dead in the water. I'm sorry.
Wow. That is amazing. That is amazing. You know, culture is... it's more than a buzzword right now. It is the word. because this is how you're attracting people. This is how you're keeping people. And I tell people all the time, culture is it's not really a good or a bad culture. It's your culture. And those things attract people.
Right.
So if you I tell people if you got a culture where it's a culture of introverts that are built in, then, you know, it's going to set up to attract those introverts. And somebody that's an extrovert in that type of a culture may not thrive.
Right.
And so culture is so important. Talk about culture and why we need to focus on culture and why is that important in 2019, getting ready to go into 2020, this new decade. I think culture is bigger than ever. You talk about that for
me. Well, I didn't say this, but it was Lou Gerstner who ran IBM for I don't know how many years. He said, famously quoted as, during my time at IBM, that I recognized that culture isn't part of the game. It is the game.
Mm-hmm.
So without knowing how we relate to each other, how we solve problems together, how we delegate work, how we make sure that everybody's heard, how we make sure that everybody contributes, how we make sure that everybody is allowing themselves to be held accountable in a way that works for all the people on the team. If we don't get that in place, then we're going to have a struggle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you told me earlier you played ball in Germany, right?
That's
so
right.
How many years did you spend in Germany?
I spent 1 year in Germany before I came back over to the States.
And aside from the language gap, which obviously was there, how much different was it?
It wasn't that much different. Everybody, a lot, put it like this, the one thing I knew about a lot of Germans, they spoke multiple languages. We don't have that here.
Right.
Now, there was an audience base that didn't speak English, but a lot of them did. And I'm going to say this. I had a friend who was playing with me. He was our kicker, a good friend of mine, Per. He was from Denmark,
mm-hmm.
okay? He lived in Germany, so he played college football in the States, mm-hmm. okay? His kids knew three languages.
Right.
Okay, amazing. I mean, they were running around speaking, you know, Danish and German and English, and it was amazing. But I will say this, that one of the things I saw when I was there, one of the first things that I saw when I was there, over here we move so fast. Go, 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 go,
right,
go, go.
Right.
Over there, they take 2-hour lunch breaks. Everything shuts down. I mean, and also, you know, they took holiday. It wasn't
they take time off.
It wasn't a thing where they were just take a couple weeks off or you know what, I'm just going to get the cash instead of taking my time. They took that time,
well,
and it
was
serious.
They make you take it.
Oh.
Your boss will send you on vacation if you don't take your days, because they'll tell you you can't roll them over into the next year after the Q1. You have
That's
to
right.
take them. So they will make you take it. So how we view time, how we value time, that's a big differentiator between one culture and the other.
That's right.
How directly we communicate or how indirectly we talk between the lines, right? So my wife, as you got to know her today, she started a Montessori school in rural Tennessee, and she's very German in how she gives directions and how she gives feedback.
That's right.
That means she is in your
right
face,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there is no, I mean, you don't do what I tell you, then let's have a talk.
Yeah.
And what's the problem?
Yeah.
Right? So it was like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
And well, mind you, in rural Tennessee, in the Tennessee Valley, the people didn't like that very much.
That's right.
I'm sorry, I'm butchering the accent. So they like, and people left her. I mean, they quit left and right. And,
wow.
And until my wife came to me and said, "Christian, I don't know what to do. I'm at the end of my wit here. What am I doing wrong?" I said, "Well, do you mind if I come in and assess the situation and you be not there?" And she's like, "All right, let's do that." So I had a conversation with the team, and they said, "Well, she's your wife and all, but she's kind of in her face, and there's never any encouraging words, and there's never the pat on the shoulder, you did a great job. She only tells us when we suck."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, gosh, she was being German with you. Okay." So even us, right, we make mistakes. And this is what we tell our clients.
Yeah.
It's not about avoiding the mistakes. You're going to step on people's toes.
That's going to happen.
It's how you recover from it.
What happens after the mistake happens is make the difference.
Do you know how many? I live in one of the blackest parts of Atlanta.
That's right.
Look at me, whitey white boy, right?
That's right.
I live in one of the blackest parts of Atlanta. Do I step on people's toes? You bet I do.
Yeah.
Do I make comments that I think are funny that don't land well? Well, once in a while they do.
Yeah.
I learn.
Yeah.
I pay my dues.
Yeah.
But I'm open to be scolded. I'm open to say, hey, tell me, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
How can I do better next time? What is it? What's the layer that I haven't understood yet?
That's right.
And only if we're open to having that conversation, only if we're open to listen to each other at that level, will we cross that divide. If we're all going to stay in our trench, nothing's going to happen. Look at this country. Everybody's building a trench that's even deeper than the one their parents left them. How's that going to solve anything? Nothing.
I'm going to tell you something. Listen, a couple things. So you're so right about the fact of culture. When I was overseas, I went in a gym, and I was just in the gym, and we showered up, and I walk into the shower, and we're in the shower. It's women in the shower with us, and it was, that was a first. I was like, okay, I'm just showering, and I look to my right and my left, and there's women. I go in the sauna, they're just.
Sauna is naked.
You know,
but don't you put your naked butt on the wooden plank, right?
Okay,
put a towel out, right?
Yeah, but that was the thing about understanding and understanding cultures and understanding those things. It's so very important, because where they're different, where they're different. And where they're the same, they're the same. Okay? And so you have to know those things. And if you know those things, you can be better suited to go forward and to succeed.
Right. And that's what we do. That's what people come to us for. So if you want to find out more, The Culture Mastery is the name of the company. That's also the name of the website, The Culture Mastery, one word. We're all over the internet, and hey, we make the culture gap get a little smaller, and sometimes we even make it go away.
Most definitely. I have one more question for you. It's one question, but it's a two-part question.
All right.
That question is, what was your greatest mistake? Okay. And then number two, what was your biggest win?
Wow. I wish I had a quick answer to that. My biggest win, let me start with that. In our industry, there is called big corporations called RMCs, relocation management companies, and they're kind of the big boxes that handle corporate relocation and all the talent management. And I was able, or our small, we're a boutique firm, and we are high touch, so we do what the big boxes don't do because they can't scale that low.
That's right.
And we poached one of their key clients because their client was fed up with the cookie cutter offering that the RMC was giving them. They said, hey, we need somebody like you who really truly understands our employees and can take them by the hand at a level that your big competitor can't do. So that was a big validation for our model, that our high-touch service is highly individualized, and that corporations are willing to pay premium for that, which I'm still salivating over that. One of my biggest mistakes was maybe not starting that sooner. I didn't trust myself into doing that. I'm assuming Larry will be talking about this in a little bit. I was in corporate Germany and then corporate America for a while, and I didn't trust myself fully in going out on a limb and being my own boss. And I was side hustling what I do now back then, and I should have gone full force a couple of years sooner. But coulda, woulda, shoulda, in hindsight, it's all 2020, and 2020 is just around the corner. We got a couple of more weeks. I got a clear vision, man.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward, not backward.
Man, well, listen, we're so excited for you. And let me tell you something. You've done some great things. I can't tell that you even have a German accent or anything like.
I can do the German accent if you ask me.
Okay,
to.
Okay, I like that.
But I choose not to. You know.
Hey, look! He turned it on right there. Yeah.
You know, and I was a foreign exchange student in high school, right? So I came to this country as a high school exchange student in 1988 in northwestern Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah, you betcha.
Oh, and wow!
It is bloody cold.
Wow.
So I was a teenager. This was 88, right?
Okay.
So the high school kids asked me, "Hey, Christian, can you do the Schwarz for us?" I said, "Do the what? Well, can you do the Schwarzenegger for us?" I said, "Oh, you want me to do that accent? Oh, okay." So ever since then, I thought, nah, this is too corny. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. So, man, well, y'all do great work, and we appreciate all the stuff that y'all have done today and what y'all do for people, helping to pull them everything together. So we appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And last but not least. Mr. Larry, I'm so excited for you. You dropped a ton of knowledge for everybody in our last group that we had, and I wish that you could have talked for an hour, because I know you could probably just pour out the knowledge just not even thinking. You probably have forgot more than most people know in this space.
I thought age wasn't going to come up here.
Hey, listen. But let me say, but that's the wisdom. Like, let me say, and so, you know, and for me, you know, I always sit and I learn. One of the things that that Christian was talking about, the reason why people go into other countries and they don't respect their culture is pride. You have to be humble. It's about having humility. And so, and I've always been a lifelong learner. One of my mentors, who was president of our college, Benjamin Dunlap, he has one of the greatest TED Talks out there. It's called Being a Lifelong Learner. If y'all have an opportunity to listen to it, please listen to it. But he talks about consistently learning. That's what I always do. So every day I'm always trying to look, who can I learn from? And I definitely appreciate the nuggets that you shared today. Please tell people what it is that you do. Tell them about your company. And then, you know, just give them a brief history of how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Let me tag on a little bit what Christian said regarding culture. I'm an ex-IBMer.
Okay.
Gerstner was brought in to IBM to change the very deep culture of IBM, which was all, we were the best, we were the greatest, and I was fortunate to be with IBM during those times.
Yes.
We were the Google.
That's
of
right.
The data processing, the emergence of the data processing world. But we were all so ingrained internally, and Gerstner, if I remember correctly, was from Nabisco, so we called him the Cookie Monster, came in to try and get IBM more conventional with the rest of the world. We live in a lot of cultures today. I'm, as you know, and your audience probably will figure out real soon, I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah.
My son-in-law is a next gen.
Yeah.
And, of course, we deal now with millennials.
That's right.
And there are as many millennials as there are baby boomers.
Yeah, actually more.
Yes, yeah. That's correct. And there are different worth ethnics between those different generations.
Correct.
And I'm often, my son-in-law, which I'm very proud of, is a financial M&A guy for a publicly traded company.
Oh, wow.
And I hear him talk about his experiences with millennials. And it's a different culture thing. So, Christian, I enjoyed your comments, and I think it's important that people understand that the thinking and the beliefs that millennials have, and conversely, is something that we all need to address. Now, as far as my background, how I got into I'm the owner of the Ritz Group, and as we said in the meeting and for your audience, not the hotel and not the cracker, but the Ritz Group is an entrepreneurial, nonprofit entrepreneurial organization that is the oldest in Atlanta to connecting and networking angels with entrepreneurs.
Wow.
I bought the company 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I felt like the dog that caught the car because I was an entrepreneur and I didn't understand this thing called capital finance and how to get money from angels and things called VC, whatever they were at that That's point right. in time. I clearly didn't understand that. And so I was trying to sell the Ritz Group, my main business, which is an Azure platform developer with a product, a community product called Match. And I went to sell it to the Ritz Group and they said, well, we're tired. Why don't you just buy it? We're selling the Ritz Group. And I said, how much? And we agreed on a price, and I bought it because I really loved the entrepreneurial space. And but I did feel like the dog that caught the car. Oh, my gosh, what do I do now?
Yeah, right.
I am one of those guys that That's I was right. trying to really understand. It's been a ball. We immediately launched something called Shark Attack, which was identical, ripoff of Shark Tank.
Okay.
But we used locals.
Yeah.
And it wasn't ours was reality. Theirs is not necessarily reality. But the Shark Tank, to their credit, legitimized the world of entrepreneurialism.
No, you're totally
they
right.
really did because – You know, my wife for years says, you're an entrepreneur. And I said, absolutely. And she says, when are you going to get a real job?
No, look, you're so right. Because when I started in business, people were like, you're an entrepreneur. So what you're saying is you don't got a job, right? Yeah. And it was like.
Thanks to Shark Tank that did that. We were fortunate. What that did was, first of all, it distinguished the Ritz Group. When you're 33 years old, the answer is that's a has-been.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
The answer is Shark Attack for us, we've interviewed over 1,000 companies.
Wow.
We've run over 50 events where four or five companies present to a panel of sharks, which are the icons within the industry.
Yeah.
So I couldn't have gotten these icons to come to a monthly Ritz Group meeting for all the tea in China, but would they judge for shark attack? Absolutely. Yeah. They were there. We videoed them, and it was just really a tremendous learning experience. And so we've been doing it for 5 years, and then the first thing I sit down every year with my board, and I have a prestigious board, and say, how can the Ritz Group be different? Because, see, you see in 5 years, what you may not realize is we have over 20 organizations that support entrepreneurs.
Wow.
We now have over 40 innovation centers that support corporate innovation.
That's great.
We now have over 45 to 50 co-working and accelerator spaces that we didn't have 5 years ago. That's crazy. Tell me again what the Ritz Group is all about. Yeah. And so we sit down every year and say, how can we make a difference in Atlanta's tremendous ecosystem? Mm-hmm. And as you all know here, we are diverse locations. We've now got these ecosystems springing up in Marietta, mm-hmm. okay, with the farm.
That's right.
You've got heavily downtown Atlanta. We just heard today about a new ecosystem or an innovation center coming up here in the heart of Atlanta. There are four or five here, by the way.
That's right.
You've got WeWorks everywhere with co-working spaces. We've got some, almost two or three, I think, in there's probably more. That's the only reason I hesitate. In Norcross,
yes.
at Peachtree Center. We've got Alpharetta, who thinks they are the tech capital with over 60 to 80 companies, technology companies based in Alpharetta.
That's right. Roswell,
yet,
I mean.
Yeah, but who wants to drive out there and here and vice versa? Who wants to drive in there out here? So we're becoming very localized.
That's great.
So the answer is, what can the Ritz Group do to be a player in this ecosystem that is so vibrant mm-hmm. And stay current? And so we come up with three things that I think were very important. We're going to take Shark Attack and go digital with it. Mm. The goal of Shark Attack is to image companies. I want to see your pitch. I want to perfect your pitch. Okay? It's important. The more you can pitch, wherever you can pitch, will help you. Mm-hmm. Because you'll get advice at every time you pitch. And if you're not pitching, you're not getting any money because you just don't do it. One pitch. Some guy said, I've launched four companies. And this latest company, I'm still trying to raise funds, and I'm just as frustrated as I was from the first one. And then I realized that the guy says, well, you have to pitch 100 times. And I pitched a couple times and didn't get what I wanted. And I go, oh, my God, I don't know if I've got 98 more in me. But you've got to pitch.
That's
you've
right.
got to be everywhere. So Digital Shark Attack is something we piloted in December. We're rolling out in 2020 wow. to allow them to create their pitch using PowerPoint, using the voiceover in PowerPoint, and then you can make an MP4 out of it and send it to us. We'll grade it. We'll help you with it. When we get it right, then we're going to have a digital GoToMeeting or Zoom presentation of where we play the pitches, have the founder or the owner there to answer questions and people there to critique it. Of course, the value of that is being able to post that on our website and or the entrepreneur's website or any place else that will have it, again, to get exposure. So Digital Shark Attack is one of the things. We're one of the few organizations that have a monthly angel luncheon, which is like an angel think tank. We do one in Cobb County at the Galleria. The Georgian Club. We do one in Midtown at the Peachtree Club, where we have up to 20 angels have lunch with us every month.
Wow.
It's a think tank. But the key is real simple. And it's a think tank for me to say, what can we do to get more angels and get more investment? And I use it as a think tank. And so we do that twice. We do that two angel club meetings each month. And that is something we're going to continue in 2020. The next thing that we really can do is Atlanta can be a first, and this is a Chamber of Commerce moment. Be a first if we digitally connect all of the entrepreneurs with a match market platform that we launch for our members. So we want our members to go digital, but not only digital from our members, but digital connected to the ecosystem, but also to the world in the World Wide Web. Maybe even Germany, Christian.
Okay.
yes, V. Gates. So we have an opportunity to do that. And it started with the Atlanta Ecosystem Guide by Startup Atlanta, who did and featured 180 organizations and companies. Well, there are 1,500. And so it's not a list. It's a pure match market where entrepreneurs say, here's what I want, and angels and service providers say, here's what I have. And match is simply putting the haves with the wants.
That's right.
And it's that simple. If we could do that, and we're working hard to make that happen in 2020, then Atlanta, Georgia is now where we've got centers in Savannah and Augusta, Columbus. If we can be the first in the country, all right, to be able to digitally connect our ecosystem, it would be huge.
It would be phenomenal.
Better than Silicon Valley.
No, totally.
And Austin and all those other places that are not more infrastructure than we have. Nobody has probably more infrastructure, organizations, and opportunities. They have more investment going on because they have more what I call house money winners that are that just got a payoff of $5 to $6 million from the $100,000 they invested in a company 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and now they're back in the game. Left-handed golf clubs for Germans who used to live in Tennessee, I'm in.
That's right.
Okay.
Actually, I would need lefties.
That's right. So we have a chance to take the entrepreneurial community in Georgia digital. Now, the entrepreneurial community in Georgia historically has been very siloed.
Yeah. Let me tell you something.
Sure.
You're so right. 5 years ago, I started investing in these cities outside of Atlanta because I saw that. I started going into Macon,
sure.
Savannah, Columbus, Augusta, and I said, we're creating this bubble in Atlanta. We have to start doing stuff in these other communities. So you are so right to that point.
And having an event, God love a great event.
Yeah.
I've done 50 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But after the event goes, it's over.
What happens?
It's over.
What's the follow-up?
It's done. There's not. Digitally, if we're all digitally connected, then and we're not taking away from membership in the local organization.
Sure.
But if we're digitally connected on a match basis, okay, now we're connected forever. Plus, we follow each other. We're able to send matches to colleagues. It's truly revolutionary. It's a first for Georgia. It's part of the governor's Connect Rural Georgia effort.
Okay.
So it's a big deal. The second thing we can do is there's over, as I said earlier, there's 40 corporate innovation centers and more coming. Hopefully IBM will be here shortly. And
yeah.
More innovation centers springing up around Georgia Tech and around the other centers. Corporate innovation is different than entrepreneurial, although corporate innovation wants to connect to the entrepreneur, but they all are driving innovation from internal within their corporation, plus externally to have an entrepreneurial mindset, but also to compete with the Googles and the Apples, and by the way, all these phenomenal entrepreneurs that are not restricted, that are creating products that are truly unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Now, whether the corporation buys that product later or early in the game or can develop it themselves is very important. We're fortunate that we've got a match platform that helps internal corporate innovation plus connect to the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And we're connected with the state. The state has a wonderful head of corporate innovation. ATDC is part of that program. Emory University is part of the corporate innovation. We have a wonderful opportunity in 2020, and it's the Ritz Group is the driver of these things. To be able to be digitally connected from our corporate innovation world, those are two Chamber of Commerce moments to say, Georgia has connected our entrepreneurial ecosystem digitally. We've connected our corporate innovation centers digitally. So those are two of the key things that we're doing. The third thing that the Ritz Group is doing is something that I struggled with, and Jay also mentioned a little bit about it, in terms of getting your business plan and your business act together. That's a whole different economic sphere of saying, I want you, JR, to run a private shareholder-based company.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, wait a minute, does that mean a public company? No, it's not a public company. You don't go public unless you're $50 million, get $2 million you can lay out, and you get a lot of experts to tell you how to do it. We're talking about going private. We're talking about raising funds from shareholders under government regulations. They're not as strict as going private or going public, but they are called going private. So the answer is, well, I've never run a private shareholder company. How do you do that? And the whole financial structure of creating, evaluation of a company, looking at the five-year forecast in terms of what you're going to do, looking at the exit strategy, looking seriously at your team. When you're doing that, you already have a beta or a proof of principle. In which case, if you don't have that, then the answer is then you're not ready for that.
That's right.
But at that point in time, you've got to run a private shareholder company. Now, one of the things that we did is we developed and recognized that that was the number one problem. They don't teach you that in school, okay? And assume you went to jail, went through all his whole courses. None of his courses really teach you how to run
a company,
a privately held shareholder company with shareholders.
That's right.
So we did something called the capital drill. And the reason that that got started, I did that in 2002 when I was trying to figure out how do you manage private shareholders, and what's valuation, what's dilution, and why is all that stuff important, and how do you go through this drill? My God, this is so complex. And unfortunately, the people that are lending the money, the VCs and the angels, like to keep it complex because it's the old story. You're trying to sell something to somebody and he knows more about your product than you do.
That's right.
So how do you convince him to do it your way? And he says, hey, JR, I heard you. You make tremendous sense. Now, here are my terms. And you're sitting there saying, okay. And that's not right. So one of the things that we did is I developed capital drill modeling where I can then set up all the shareholders, all the existing founders, the friends, the families, make sure the pool is right, make sure the shares are right, do all the full dilution on a five-year plan. Joe, you'll like this. We have a very definitive five-year plan, and it's not with rose-colored glasses because that's where they fell as far as their forecast.
Right.
Make sure that five-year plan is absolutely jam-up, jelly-tight, not with rose-colored glasses. We have sessions in which we interrogate the owner. And, God, I'm as guilty as anybody else. When I get in front of that Excel spreadsheet, man, we're going to increase 40% every month, ongoing and ongoing and ongoing, because this Excel spreadsheet allows me to do that.
That's
and
right.
How reality is that? Not at all. So by auditing these companies to take them private, okay, and set them up for issuing stock, term sheets, subscription agreements, and then what I believe so very, very strongly in is managing that shareholder relationship quarterly. I am also going to project to you, based on your revenue projection, the cash flow that you're going to need from outside sources, based on your revenue. And of course, if the revenue is a shortfall, then we have to add more cash. Okay. And I'm going to be able to project all that. Right? And then I can tell you exactly what every round is going to be worth at exit. What's wrong with that? The answer is, well, if I'm an investor, I'd like to know that. I can tell you that if you hit those numbers for seed round investors, okay, I can tell you exactly you're going to get 20x or better. I can tell you if you're a Series A round investor, you're probably going to get 15x on your $100,000 investment. I can tell you on a Series B round that you're probably going to get 10 to 12x on your investment. And if I can do that, then I can turn around and say, let's back down the revenue, the EBITDA, and something now that it's very important is members. Thanks to Snapchat, members are worth $100 from a multiple, okay, times the members. I can back down and give you the minimum revenue, EBITDA, and minimum members that you need to hit the investor returns of 20x, 15, and 10.
Let me go ahead. Let me interject one thing real brief. When you say you need a business plan, that's the cart before the horse. That's preparing them to meet someone like you, to meet someone like a venture
absolutely
capital,
no,
to
absolutely
meet a hedge fund, to meet the bank, to come to me, Pinpoint Brokers, to underwrite, to help them get a loan, or qualify, or help them be able to see a JR, right? I'm excellent with numbers, very bad with names. All right, so I apologize if I don't remember. But however, so in defense of that, it's when I say you're the business plans, you will be surprised when someone want to come to you, when you get that email and you invite them out to the seminar, they're not prepared. For somebody to get in front of a Bank of America or to get in front of your company, they need to be prepared. That's the biggest thing about a business plan, is being in preparation. And that's the number one thing that I say. And then to go, and I'll stop, give you back your time. That's when I say you must be prepared. And the business plan is what? It's just a structure of your business. Then when they give it to somebody like yourself, somebody like me, okay, we can get you some money. But first, you gotta catch my interest.
Sure.
You can't catch my interest with words. Let me see your vision on paper. And if you don't take that time out to write it, I don't have an interest. So that's all I want to say.
I think it's a good point.
I'm an advocate. You can't open. I've opened several businesses. I'm an advocate. You can't do anything without a business.
Yeah.
Right. My wife ran a high-end women's clothing store for 30 years. Talk about a volatile business. But I bought an Apple IIe computer when she first started, and I ran spreadsheets to be able to run that business on spreadsheets. Right. So I agree with that. Now, what we do is we take it to the next level, all right, after you've done the basic business, because now we've got to project how you're going to exit. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, exits for years have been 5 years. You realize that we didn't hit those numbers. We've been doing this for 20 years. This whole process of going equity or going private, and private angel investments and VCs, started in 1998 with a fund by Joe Frank Harris, governor then, in which case he funded Atlanta companies, and that started the whole thing. The bubble broke in 2002, and so we're not naive having 2 decades to play this game. They're not exiting in 5 years. Mm. Exiting is 7.5 years. Mm-hmm. Worse, some go 15.
Wow.
It's worse than that. Some don't exit at all. Why? Because the metrics that they're trying to grow on and the revenue they're trying to achieve and the milestones that they're trying to achieve do not qualify for the next round of funding. If you fail to meet those metrics, those revenue, if your revenue flattens off and you're missing your targets, it's like going to a bank and saying, my business is in the red and it's going fast. Can I get a loan? You're not going to get the loan.
That's right.
The same thing happens in private equity when you go from seed round to a Series A round. If you don't have the prototype and you failed to fund the prototype, or A to B, and you fail to meet the revenue goals and objectives, you're not going to get a B round. Some companies stall out. They continue to and may pay dividends to their companies. They may just say to the shareholder, who's unliquid, shareholders can't sell their shares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just stay there and they're in. They may pay dividends. They may not pay dividends. The shareholder's stuck until there's an M&A occurrence. Okay, or that something happens. Okay, and it's usually an M&A, it's only they can bail it out, to then exit the current shareholders, the stockholders.
And this is like, I'm going to talk to you even more, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to say this on air, but you have so much information, we need to figure out how to get you a show, too. I'm serious. I'm serious with this. How do people get in touch with you?
Well, the best way is theritzgroup.org, RITZGROUP.org, and everything that we've talked about here today is on the website. Our website is up to speed. I'm not, and I apologize, big on social media other than LinkedIn.
Okay.
And we're going to take steps in 2020 to shore that up. Again, back to culture change. Millennials like Facebook.
That's right.
I'm not a big Facebook fan. Personally, it's now becoming a very important element in business. So
it is important. But I would say this too: if you're mining for gold, you need to go where the gold is.
You're exactly right. Right. I'm going to bring Christian on board to help me get into Facebook because it's part of the culture change, right? So Facebook is that's important. But richgroup.org is where you find about all the programs that I've just talked about here today. That's up to speed, and we look forward to helping you.
Yeah.
We're running a class.
Okay.
There are 2 classes that I'm trying to launch in 2020. One is this capital private equity boot camp.
Okay.
To teach this part for companies that are raising, that have seed round and are raising a Series A round or a Series B round. That's when you need the private equity training, not prior to that. So we're going to be running a class quarterly.
Where do you know what that's going to be at?
It's going to be at Alpharetta.
Okay.
We have a classroom in Alpharetta.
Okay.
And there's a lot of good things happening in Alpharetta, by the way, with TAG being locating an innovation center, if you will, in Alpharetta. And you've got the TAG Entrepreneurial Center out there. The Alpharetta Center has been there. The Technology Center has been there. So we're going to do that quarterly. We're going to run a class for entrepreneurs and angels. I want to run and launch a 3-4-hour modules of Angel Academy, which talks about a lot of things we've just talked about today. Because the answer is, if we're short of angels in Georgia, which we are. And by the way, once you get a Series A or a B round, and you get it from Silicon Valley, guess where you get your next rounds? Silicon Valley.
That's right.
You stay there. If you go to Nashville, which is really high in medical because they've had good medical exits, you get your A round there. You'll get your B round there also. You may have to move your company there. And so we need to keep them here.
Keep
we
them
create here. More angels. We'll fund more companies. And so there's 4 modules to that for beginning angels. And then there's the modeling and the private equity drill that we talked about. Is the second 4-hour module, and the third 4-hour module is where we actually bring real companies in to pitch, and we critique the companies with the new angels and professional angels in the room. So from that point on, they have no fear about going out and investing in private equity companies. And again, remember, investing in private equity with success of the stock market and all the other places that you can invest your money, you know, with the failure rate in private equity is a corner that we've got to turn. I want you to go to your country club, and I want you to, at your country club or at your church, and I want to have Christian hit me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, Larry, remember that investment that you weren't going to write the check for? I want you to come out and look at my new Ferrari that I just bought with cash because they just exited."
No,
and that's how we'll bring back
the
angel investment in our entrepreneurs.
One last thing.
Sure.
He says we have 30 seconds, but in this 30 seconds,
sure,
what is the number one thing that an entrepreneur should know when they're getting started? Just
build a team, but build a team of mentors.
Okay.
With the expertise in private equity funding, with JL's expertise, somebody that knows the proper, that's done it before.
Yeah.
Okay, and they love to help young entrepreneurs. Build your team with the expertise that can give you the mentoring and the advice and the guidance. That's number one. Number two, go to every friggin' event or every co-working space in your local area to get engaged with those people. That's the only way to get through this mouse maze with any kind of speed and efficiency. Remember, time is money.
That's right.
You know, and stay employed as long as you can before you're on your own. Have a well-detailed plan. You know exactly what you're doing, when you're going to do it, and then pedal as fast as you can to execute it. You'll always get a little setback here and there, but that's why entrepreneurs are entrepreneurs.
That's right. Hey, I told y'all before we started the show, it was going to be action-packed content. From JL to Christian to Larry, we had some great content. Listen to this, listen to it again, and then listen to it again, okay? So that all of this information can sink in, because you didn't get it on this first time, and you're probably not going to get it on the second time. Right. You may get everything on the third time. Listen to it. All of this will be live up. This is our last show, and I want to say this was a great day today.
Right.
At the Grand Hyatt Regency downtown Atlanta, we had some amazing things happen. I thank all my 3 guests for being on. Thank y'all for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And until next time, this is JR McNair with Velocity Radio.